This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Pointer Sisters, I'm so excited.
And we are excited to have live on the line from New York, author of the book called Married Women Who Love Women. We have Karen Strock on the line. Hi there, Karen.
Hello, how are you?
Wonderful. So it's a Friday evening on a lovely New York night.
A chilly New York evening.
Okay. In contrast, beautiful Saturday morning, sun shining, blue skies here in Melbourne. So now tell us about, let's start from the beginning, Karen. You grew up in Brooklyn to a very creative family.
Yes, I did. I was always told that I could do anything I wanted, and if I wanted to paint, my dad brought me home a paint set. And so I was very comfortable with whatever I wanted to do. And I was always also brought up to know that I was going to marry a nice man and have family, and that was my option. And I didn't know there were other options. So, and I didn't know anything about myself until I turned 44. And I was sitting and having coffee with a friend of mine, and I looked across the table, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm in love with this woman.
All right. Never
had any inkling.
At all. So 44 years of, what should we call it, comfortable ignorance.
Yes.
Mhm. So tell us a bit about your early life. You talked about your father buying you some things. Tell us about a bit about where you grew up and the rest of the family.
Oh, I have an older brother and a younger sister. People talk a lot these days about dysfunctional families. I have to say, I think mine was pretty functional. So I think I might have been in the minority. But it was a very comfortable family, very loving family, and a very accepting family. And
were they politically active or anything like that?
No.
Just pretty
straight. My dad worked hard. My mom was home with us and did some part-time work. And we grew up with music lessons, the traditional things, the public school. Mm-hmm. We went to the country in the summertime. And a very, very basic childhood.
And what about boyfriends? Were they sort of cool with you having boyfriends?
I had my share of boyfriends. I had an older brother, and I played with him and his friends quite often. There aren't very many girls in the neighborhood, but I don't think that had anything to do with my finding out about myself, making this extra discovery later in life.
Just the way it was.
And Karen, I love your quote on your website. Until you're about 43, you said you would have said with absolute certainty that you am not or could not ever become a lesbian. And is that you would identify as lesbian now? Is that right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you mentioned before you glanced across a cup of coffee and discovered you're in love with your best friend. So what happened there?
Well, our friendship was based on such openness and honesty that I felt compelled to tell her what I was feeling. But my feelings weren't returned, and I went on a quest to find out, was it her or was it me? Mm-hmm. And I'm a pretty gutsy person, and it was the most difficult thing I'd ever done in my life, going into the Gay and Lesbian Center, checking all this stuff out. And what I realized, what I found out, was it wasn't her, it was me.
I guess.
And what it was just discovering another dimension.
It's pretty gutsy to have told her, I reckon, Karen. Just backtracking. It was pretty gutsy to have actually told your best friend that you're in love with her.
Well, I just felt that if my feelings were so strong, she had to have that kind of feeling. But the reality is, two people don't always have the same feelings for each other. I've learned a lot on my journey, and I've learned that women make this discovery at any age. And the reason the book came about was with my quest to find out. There was no information. Wherever I looked, even if something was in the catalog in the library, I couldn't find it on the shelves. Very little information was out there. And when I started talking to people, women started bringing their friends to me, and then people started calling me from across the country. I had put flyers out, and women were photocopying the flyers and sending it to their friends. This was before the email, before the internet was available to everyone. And I realized that a great many women were going through the same kinds of discoveries as I was. I had one woman, one of the early book readings that I was doing, come to me clutching the book and sobbing. And she told me that she had planned her suicide. She thought she was the only woman in the world, the only married woman ever to have fallen in love with another woman. And she had no idea what to do about it. She thought the best thing she could do for her husband and children was to kill herself. Mm-hmm. And on the night that she knew her family was going to be out late, she had planned to do it. She was coming home from work, and she passed a bookstore, and they were just putting my book, Married Women Who Love Women, in the window. And she saw the title, and she realized she wasn't the only one, and she chose to live.
I just got goosebumps.
I get emails like that from across the world, but this is the only woman that I saw face-to-face telling me the story, and I still see her face as I repeat the story. So it's important, and I think it's wonderful what you're doing, getting the word out that women aren't alone, and they do have options.
I guess if my personal story is I've been out for a long time, but a lot of my, and sort of in the late 70s, a lot of my friends were women who were married, and in those, and it was difficult, and some women were in denial about it, some not, but I think the difficulty, particularly 30 years ago, was around children and things like that, because there just wasn't the legislation or even the social acceptance of number one, the sexuality, and secondly, even considering changing the family unit.
And the fear.
Exactly.
The fear that children could be taken from them, the fear economically they'd be destitute. Up until 1970, I think from 1961 to 1970, only one gay character was documented on a television show. From 1991 to the year 2000, there were 306 documented gay characters. So it shows that we're opening up. It's not that we've never been around. It's just that everything has been so hush-hush and so secret. And women lived in very clandestine lives.
Yeah. And particularly women as opposed to men, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
So you talked about going into the Gay and Lesbian Resource Centre or Community Centre. Mm-hmm. What was that like, stepping through that door for you?
Mm. It was absolutely terrifying. I felt as though if somebody looked at me, they could see my heart beating out of my chest. I drove around the street three times hoping I wouldn't be able to find a parking space. And this is in New York City, and there was a parking space right in front, and I just had to go in. I felt as though I was climbing a mountain, going up those two or three steps. And as I said, I'm a pretty gutsy person, so I realize how difficult it is for most women. And I hope I never forget those first feelings.
Did you know any lesbians before then?
Not that I knew of.
I mean, they probably did,
but I had no idea who might be or who might not be.
Not even your gym teacher, huh?
Well, I remembered counselors that I might have thought, oh, she's pretty. But I thought everybody admired pretty women. I'm a painter.
Yeah, so you have an eye for beauty.
Right. So I never associated it with anything having to do with sexuality. But it's if you give a child three colors, you say, here's red, yellow, and blue, what's your favorite? They're picking from a limited amount. If they've never seen chartreuse and orange and purple, there are a lot more colors out there.
That's very true.
And little girls, I mean, everyone's first love, I believe, is another woman. It's that mother, the sense, the feel, the touch, the smell, the sound. And when little girls are around, too, they're told, no, no, you're going to marry somebody like your daddy. And that's just how our world works. And little girls were never told that there were options. Somebody that I was interviewing was telling me about her children, and they were watching a show on television where two women married. And I think the children at the time were 10 and 12, and one said, oh, I think that's disgusting. And the other one said, I think it's wonderful. I didn't know that two women could love each other like that.
Yeah.
So it's not to say that one will be gay and one may not be gay, but it's saying now they know there are other options out there other than red, yellow, and blue.
That's right.
And I think that's what we need to do. We need to be aware. What we do as a society is we put people in pigeonholes because it makes us feel safe. if I shop in Macy's and you shop at Macy's, then I know I'm shopping at the right store. But if you shop in a different store, well, maybe my choice is not the right one.
I guess the complication, though, in all this is that you were married at the time, as opposed to a single woman who was dating guys and then discovered that, you know, there's a whole other set of people available.
Absolutely.
So how was that for you?
It was quite difficult. My husband happens to be an extremely special guy. My kids are phenomenal kids. My family truly, truly practices unconditional love. Would they prefer I was not a lesbian? Probably. Do they accept me as a lesbian? Yes, they do. And I'm very blessed and I'm very lucky.
So you're still married?
I'm still married. My husband and I are in a redefined relationship. We care about each other. We're open with each other. And we have our children we share, and we have grandchildren that we share. Mm-hmm. And there's a comfort in being with people. I know my husband since I'm 16 years old. He would never throw me out of the house. I would never throw him out of the house. My sexuality is just something that I discovered after I was married.
Mm. Yeah, well, Karen, my story's a little bit similar. I discovered I think probably if I look back, I knew from year dot, but when I was married, and with my husband, we were more or less like brother and sister, and we're still very good friends. So it's a wonderful point that you make about unconditional love. That's so true, and it's such a wonderful thing.
Well, you know, if you were to interview people, most people marry, maybe not so much now, but when I was growing up and when I was working on the book, people would marry for economics, to be accepted to society, to be accepted by family and church. And down the road, like number five or six, they might have been marrying for sex. But very few people said sex was number one on the reasons they were marrying. And if we're aware of that, it makes a very big difference. What we see on television and what is real are very, very different.
That's true. Well, we might leave it there for the moment, Karen, and have a break and play a music track and come back and talk some more in just a moment. We're talking with Karen Strock, who is the author of Married Women Who Love Women, here on Saturday Magazine with Ms and Leanne.
Joy.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine with Ms and Leanne, and that was K.D. Lang, Sexuality. Very appropriate, because this week on our Journey segment, we're talking with Karen Strock, who's the author of Married Women Who Love Women. Hope you're still on the line there, Karen.
Yes, I am.
We thought that was an appropriate tune to play.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
So, Karen, yes, we were talking a little bit before about your story, and I actually compared it similar to mine in that, yes, I was married and discovered I loved women, in my case, more than my husband's, I moved on and left that relationship behind. So in your book, you talk more about continuing with both relationships. Is that a way to put it? It's just interesting to discuss why make that decision.
When I speak to women, and a lot of women come to me for counseling, I tell them there is no right or wrong way. For each person, whatever works for them, works for them. Something may work for them for a year or for 10 years or not at all. For another person, another thing may work. People tend to want everyone to do what they do, again, because then it shows that they're doing the right thing. But there are some women who can redefine their relationships as I have, and there are some who can't. And it's not a good or a bad, and it's not the right or the wrong. It's just the way it is. What's interesting is the first edition of my book that came out, very few women spoke to me about redefined relationships. In the second edition, a lot did. And also, the single lovers of married women came forth and told their stories. What I'm also finding very interesting is that in the first edition, women would take the book and hide it, either wrap it in another book jacket or put it in an envelope or carry it under their coat. Now, people are buying the book. Heterosexual people are as interested in reading it as gay people are. because, again, it's just we're learning more. We're opening ourselves up.
Mm. What sort of time frame was there between the two editions, Karen?
The first edition came out in 1998, and the second edition came out in 2008.
Okay, so in that 10 years, you think our society's expanded and moved on in terms of acceptance of different relationships?
We have expanded, not as much as we have to. We're still taking baby steps, but we've come a long way from the time where a gay person was never even noticed or seen on television. Our advertising, we have a lot of advertising now focused on the gay person because we're part of the society, we're part of the community. We spend our dollars like everybody else, and the world is sitting up and taking notice of that. We're people.
Yeah, and you also mentioned before the break there, Karen, about how we like to pigeonhole people. And interestingly, discussing this interview coming up around the station, a GLBTI radio station, a lot of people were like, wow, still married. So obviously, even within this community, there's a little bit of pigeonholing going on.
There is. Some people accept it and some don't. I can go into a group and tell people what my situation is, and there are some women who will turn away and walk right away, and there are others who won't. Some say to me that married women are more nurturing because they haven't had to only take care of themselves. They've had to take care of other people. For some, yes. For some, no. It's a bell curve like every other type of society. As I say, for me, this is working. For other people, it may not work. But I never point a finger and say this is what you should do. And I think that's why my book was so well received. I just share the stories, the things that people were going to. The book started, I was at a writer's conference, and I mentioned it as a working title, and all of a sudden there was a hush, and I realized, oh my God, I just outed myself in front of a room full of people. Now I'm going to be with these women for a whole week and nobody will talk to me. This goes back again in the early 90s. And then this woman timidly raises her hand and says, how does a woman make the discovery? And another woman says, what does she do when she finds out? What kind of men are they married to? How do their children deal with it? Anyway, their questions are so universal that they became my chapter titles. And it's, is it the easiest place to be, being a lesbian and being in a marriage? No, it's not. But at this point in my life, this is how it is. And for someone else, it may not be, and it may not work.
So, Karen, can I ask you about relationships you've had with women? The first one, where you were in love with your best friend, didn't work out because you didn't feel the same.
That's true.
Presumably, you persevered.
Persevered. We
not with her.
I spoke to her just yesterday, and I told her that I was going to be on the show. And that goes back many years ago, so it's...
Well, if she's listening in, we send our love and our best wishes to her. so you met another woman after that?
There have been women that I have been very close to in my life. Again, out of due respect to my husband, I'd rather not go into a lot of things on the air.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And you mentioned about the stories in your book, over 100 women that you discuss, hear from their stories. Tell us about some of those. What comes to your mind? Is there anything that was some of your favourite stories that the women have shared with you that you could put in the pages of this book?
Stories. There was one woman who never told her best friend that she was gay because she didn't want to lose the friendship. They moved apart from each other, and they exchanged greetings on holidays, and they'd see each other when the one woman came home to visit, et cetera, et cetera. And it was about 10 or 15 years later, through business, that she found out that her friend also was gay. Both women were gay, and neither told the other because they didn't want to lose each other's friendship. Isn't that sad?
Very sad.
Yeah. Stories like that, very poignant. Two women went to school together, loved each other at school, but just knew that they were supposed to get married, have traditional families, etc. And they ran into each other at a school reunion 40 years later, and they both confessed their love to each other, and they came together.
Oh, sweet. I went to my school reunion and there wasn't anyone gorgeous there.
Apart from you, Leanne.
Apart from me, of course, yeah.
Well, they say the only people who go back to their reunions are the ones who've remained thin or gotten rich. I don't know how true that is. But.
I'm trying to think how much I've got in the bank.
I had one woman I interviewed who was telling me that her daughter came out to her when her daughter was about 16 or 17, and her mother threw a fit. And 15 years later, the mother realized she was a lesbian.
Now, Karen, you mentioned earlier talking with women who are the single women in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of stories do they have?
They also have very powerful stories. One that I found extremely surprising, because I'm learning every day from everyone I speak to. Everyone has another story. This woman was a single woman, and she chose to be with married women because she was so far in the closet that she felt if her best friend was married, nobody would ever suspect her of being a lesbian.
Yeah, wow.
And I'd never heard it from that side of the fence before.
Mm.
And there are other women who have become part of families who share the holidays and share traditions and share the children. And there are others who don't and have had to make up their own holiday dates and share holidays at different times because they know that their lovers have to be with their families on certain occasions. It's not easy, but then very little of life is easy. And whether you stay or whether you go, if you have baggage, that baggage remains with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's around people accepting what they want from relationships and what they're prepared to do or whatever. I guess it's sort of easy to react and say, well, it's not good enough and whatever, but it's what they choose. It's how they choose to have that relationship, as long as it's on an equal par in the communication and it's respectful and all of those sorts of things.
And there are some women who don't want a woman 24/7 in their life. They need that space and that freedom. And some women have said that they have more space and freedom being in a redefined relationship than they do with their lovers. So, go no.
Well, it just proves your point that we're all different and, you know, no one else can judge what suits somebody else.
One of the things I've learned in my journey is I can say to you, your hair looks really nice today, and you have two choices. You can say thank you, or you can say, oh, it didn't look nice yesterday. In other words, it's not what I've said, but it's where you are when I say it.
Yep.
Like, I can tell anyone now I'm a lesbian. If they have a problem with it, that's their problem. Mm-hmm. It's not my problem. And once I realized that, it just freed me up to be who I really am.
Yeah, well, that story you told of the two girls who were in love from young age, they assumed that the other one was going to have a negative reaction. So, and that's why they spent their whole life not telling the other until the reunion.
Absolutely. Isn't that sad?
Yeah. It's just purely the assumption. We're gonna...
That's another thing I learned. Never make assumptions. Nobody knows what's in your head until you tell them.
So half the time I don't know what's in my own head.
That's true.
So I'm not going to go with anybody else. Like you said, you had no idea that that was going to happen at age 44. So, we don't know. We don't know what's around the corner. But I know what's around the corner for us. We need to take a short break and play some of our sponsorship announcements and a bit of music. But if you don't mind, can you stay on the line a little longer, Karen?
I'd love to. Thank you.
Terrific. We'll come back and talk with Karen Strock, who's the author of Married Women Who Love Women, here on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
You still there, Karen?
Yes, I am.
Enjoying the music and enjoying listening to the Australian accents, I should imagine, too.
Yes, I am.
Probably can't
very
understand
much.
Us. I lived in Northern California for 2 years and I had to get my partner to do most of the grocery shopping because I couldn't. No one could understand what I was asking for.
Oh.
It's all right. I've got bathroom and cell phone down to a fine art now, so that's okay.
Yeah, I didn't hear any accent when you just said that.
No, exactly. Apparently I've got one, got an accent. Now, Karen, it's been a while since you wrote the book, and I know you've been doing lots of other things, so I wondered before we finish up if you could tell us, I guess, what doors writing the book has opened for you and what you've been up to lately.
Oh, gosh. I've met wonderful people. I'm going on a cruise tomorrow, 2,000 women,
Oh, wow.
Discovery suite to the Western Caribbean. So that should be fun. I've done workshops for women's groups on cruises and on land. I would have been happy to do this interview live from your studio in Australia, but this is nice too.
Unfortunately, our budget doesn't extend.
I'm sorry?
Our budget doesn't quite extend to bringing you down to Melbourne, but we'd love to.
I know. Well, one of these years I may just pop in. I am working on some other books at present, and I have a few out with an agent. I'm finishing off a mystery now and one on the nuts and bolts of a writer's journey. When I started this book, I have to say, I never really thought I'd write a book. And I feel almost as though I was supposed to write this. Years ago, I met my aunt's neighbor, was an old woman. She took my hand and she said, "Then what do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm hoping to write short stories." And she looked me in the eye and she said, "No, you're meant to be writing women's issues." Mm. And I kind of laughed to myself. I wouldn't have known a women's issue if I fell over it at the time. I just lived in a little house with a white picket fence, and I baked for the Brownies and the Cub Scouts. Anyway, years later, when I decided this book needed to be written, a friend of mine playing devil's advocate said, "What's more important, your family or the book?" And I realized it wasn't an either-or, and I heard this old woman's voice saying, "You are meant to be writing this book." Mm. And I knew I was supposed to.
And I'm sure a lot of the readers of your book would completely agree, and from what I've read about it, it's become a little bit of a Bible for women who are married and love women, and I think they draw upon the stories of others to help guide through what they need to do during that time.
Just to show them that they're not alone, and they have more than one option open to them. I've had letters saying, "Thank you for writing my story. Thank you for writing my book." And I've had letters from husbands and from other family members saying, "Thank you for helping me to understand." I like to say for any men listening that it's not about a man being less than or more than. It's just about the woman and what she's discovered about herself. And some women say, "Oh, if my husband were this or if he was that." I don't think that's so.
Mm-hmm. The women I've spoken to, it's not that they don't love their husbands. I mean, they love their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about... It's not simple. It's not falling out of love with somebody and in love with somebody else. It's much, much broader
right,
and much deeper
kind.
Than that, I think.
Mm-hmm. There's an emotional connection that women have with each other that I don't think it's possible with very...
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.